Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. Oh, 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 oh.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock.
Merry Christmas and welcome to this, the 21st episode of the Merry Little Podcast. My name is Jeff Westover, and I am the lead Christmas tree hugger at the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com. This Merry episode is being recorded on Thanksgiving weekend, arguably the biggest Christmas tree selling period of the entire year. On the day after Thanksgiving, it has become a modern tradition for families all over to either put up their Christmas tree that has laid hidden away in the attic since last Christmas, or they head out to either the local tree lot or, for the really adventurous, the tree farm to haul in their family Christmas tree. So that makes it an appropriate time to address the tradition of the Christmas tree and some of the stuff we do and that we don't do anymore in relation to it. First up, some history. Contrary to the belief of many, the Christmas tree tradition is not pagan in origin. So many people want that to be true, but the facts just do not support it. Yes, ancient pagan practices included the seasonal decking of the halls with evergreens. Well, kinda, sorta, not really. Pagans, anciently, were quite spiritual in nature, and the belief in eternal life is fairly central to all known pagan groups that they've been able to identify. The use of evergreens to decorate homes and gathering places then makes a lot of sense for festivals held during the darkest days of the year. The evergreens are called that because they don't come and go as the leaves do on most trees. They just don't die. What better symbolism of eternal life is there than that? When shaped into a circle like that of a wreath, the symbolism becomes even more complete. Add to that the practice of the Yule log, that taking down of the tree and burning it from the inside out in a holiday ritual of light, and, well, you've got a pretty good argument that maybe Christmas trees of today came from these elements of ancient seasonal worship. Alas, it's just not true, though, folks. Christmas trees, at least as we know them, are just not that old. They date back less than 1,500 years, and historians have widely agreed that they came from Germany from decidedly Christian sources, where every intent was to tie the symbolism of the tree to Jesus Christ. Now, if you think I'm going to let Christianity off the hook here, think again. There are many within Christian circles who condemn the modern practice of the Christmas tree, declaring it unbiblical and a secular monument to the gods of consumerism. To back it up, they will quote the oft-cited scriptures of the Old Testament, which darn if they don't appear to be speaking about Christmas trees when it says, quote, "For the customs of the people are vain, for one cutteth the tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workmen with the axe. They deck it with silver and with gold, and they fasten it with nails and with hammers, that it move not." Well, what do you know about your Old Testament? Who is speaking in these verses, and who is he talking to? Well, it's certainly not about Christmas trees, because if you study the 10th chapter of Jeremiah, it is abundantly clear that it's all about idol worship, and certainly nothing close to pertaining to Christmas. Christmas trees, as we know them, only have a verifiable history of about 400 years, and they have always had a distinctive tie to the ancient Christian traditions of teaching about the Tree of Life and the Garden of Eden. Here in the United States, many falsely assume that because Queen Victoria was a tree lover, that she spurred the fad of having a Christmas tree. But it isn't that simple either. Trees had actually been in the United States and popular in areas with huge German immigrant populations and access to the woods of pines along the U.S. East Coast. We note with curiosity the presence of Christmas trees on the night that Washington crossed the Delaware. No, they weren't common, but they were present long before Queen Victoria. Christmas trees in the United States did not get their start from a British queen, but rather from a constant exposure in early American culture. When it was featured as part of an anti-slavery society Christmas event in the 1830s, the Christmas tree became a sensation, and from that, it was fueled by printed materials that featured the Queen in the 1840s, and this is what really gave rise to the Christmas tree. The rest of the history, you know. It grew in its presence in American homes steadily until the advent of the electric light, when it just took off, making the tree the centerpiece of every family Christmas for well over a century now. Over the course of that history, we found some things come and go as it comes to Christmas trees, and even in that time span of my short life, Christmas trees have continued to evolve. I have to admit, when I was younger, I was something of a Christmas tree snob. I thought our Christmas tree always looked so much better than anyone else's. One of the reasons I was convinced of that was because my parents used light reflectors on the tree, something I never saw anyone else do. Light reflectors are little aluminum donut-like things. They have a hole in the middle where the Christmas light pokes through, and the light from the bulb reflects off the shiny surface of the reflector. You put one of those on a Christmas light, you think, wow, what's the big deal? But you put 100 of them on a tree full of lights, and the tree just looks like it's on fire. Of course, as I got older and started my collection of Christmas stuff for my own home, I was chagrined to find out that light reflectors were no longer a thing, and I could find them nowhere. These days, you can occasionally find some decent ones on eBay, but even after all of these years, I still maintain they add a level of glow to a tree that isn't normal, and that is, even still, spectacularly warm. I don't know their full history, but I assume, given my parents' age, that they were kind of an offshoot of the brief aluminum Christmas tree phase and fad of the late 1950s and early 1960s. Aluminum trees are another thing we really don't do with Christmas trees anymore. Oh, there are manufacturers out there who make metallic-looking trees, but I'm yet to find a newly manufactured aluminum tree anywhere made of genuine, real aluminum. The history of aluminum trees is yet to be completely written, but I think it can be safe to say that it was a short-lived fad thanks to Charlie Brown, who in the mid-1960s Christmas television special pretty much held up the aluminum tree as a symbol of the cold, crass, commercialized Christmas.
June, wake up, June. The tree's on fire, June. Oh no, love is a Christmas tree, but don't pick any old tree, you see. Some have long expired. Turn your house into a funeral pyre. And I watered that tree till the branches rose up higher. And it drank, 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 but it kept on getting drier. Now it burns, 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 This tree's on fire. This tree's on fire. June, call 911, June.
When Charlie Brown dissed it, well, that killed the aluminum variety of fake trees. The fake tree, of course, has not fallen out of favor, and in fact, you could arguably say that the artificial tree likely is now the preferred kind of tree in homes today, if only for the sake of fire safety alone. As that becomes more and more true, we kill off the older tradition of Christmas trees, real Christmas trees, in the process. You see, lovely as a Christmas tree is, there are a number of hassles associated with it. First, acquiring the tree has always been something of an adventure. In early America, there was usually one way and only one way to get a tree, and that was to literally head out to the woods and hunt for it, like you would a deer. In fact, the practices by which a tree was brought down and then dragged home have varied over the decades. Over on My Merry Christmas, we collect stories of Christmas memories, which are true stories of Christmas past. One of those stories is by Lawrence Hawks, titled Grandpa's Christmas Tree Hunt, which tells the story of heading out in the forest on a horse and taking down a tree with a rifle. I didn't believe that story until I saw videos on YouTube showing, well, that exact same thing. It made the practice we had when I was a kid of heading to the mountains of Northern California to cut down our tree simply archaic and boring. But even that practice seems to be dying as Christmas tree farms are quickly becoming a thing of the past. Well, they aren't gone, but they are continuing to dwindle in number, and the price of a real tree continues to just skyrocket. Now, I don't want to linger on the debate between which is better, the real or the artificial tree. You'll never convince me that a fake tree is as good as a real one. However, living in the desert, as I have been for better than 30 years now, I can see the necessity of the fake tree. Where I live, it is so dry that there is no way you can realistically keep a real tree inside without exposing yourself to a serious fire hazard. 30% humidity on average will do that to any live thing that isn't constantly watered, or something as large as a tree, frankly, just stands no chance. I loved the tradition of cutting down our tree and briefly toyed with the idea of visiting a local tree farm that just opened up in our valley this year. I have watched this farm since their signs went up about a decade ago when they began growing trees, and this year, it finally happened. They opened. They are offering 4-foot trees for about $50, and I guarantee you the minute you cut that tree down, it will shrivel into a fire hazard inside of a week. Christmas tree lots have traditionally been present in big cities since about the 1850s, and that makes sense because where else would city folks go to get a tree? But those two are a dying breed, if you haven't noticed it yet. Most of the fresh trees sold here in Utah on lots come from Oregon, and tree farms there are consolidating and selling out like never before. Why? Well, because of the cost, regulation, and relentless competition from the artificial tree industry. Well, there's lots of stories floating around about why the fake tree is winning, but in my mind, it is pretty simple. Go to Walmart, and there is one kind of real tree to buy, a green one. But go inside the store and look at no less than 67 different varieties of fake trees that they have this year. And that variety, by the way, is changing another thing about Christmas trees, and that is how many of them that we have. Our own surveys dating back to 1998 showed then that most families had just one tree just two decades ago. Now that number is over two. Now that doesn't sound like a huge shift, but it is frankly no longer a novelty to hear people who have several trees in their homes. And why? Well, I can only explain why, because I have recently become a multiple tree owner, and that is because it extends my decorating capabilities. My grandsons came over just before Thanksgiving the other day for the first time since Halloween. There is one large tree in our living room that I'm still setting up, but I had purchased two smaller trees as accent pieces for the entryway in our home, a kind of dead space where we really don't really know what to do with it except at Christmas time. And the boys, ages 2 and 4, had a terrific time running from one tree to the next in their excitement of being at Grandma's house. That part of the tree has never changed and never will. If you delve into the journals of personal histories left behind by those of the 19th century, you will invariably find no greater written record about Christmas than the ones where grown adults then saw their first Christmas tree for the first time. It was an absolute wonder to them. And this explains, as if through the eyes of a child, what a wonder it is to even see a tree today inside as we celebrate Christmas. Many were simply left beyond words, and Christmas trees have never lost that magic touch, and they never will.
With a hey and a he and a ho ho, with a he and a ho and a ha ha, with a ho and a ha and a he he, ho.
I'm the happiest Christmas tree, ho ho ho, ho he he he. Someone came and they found me and took me home with them. Oh, I'm the happiest Christmas tree, ho ho ho, he he he. Look how pretty they dress me, oh lucky, lucky me. I got shiny bells that jingle and tiny lights that tingle. Whenever anyone passes by, I blink my lights and I wink my eye. Oh, I'm the happiest Christmas tree, a Christmas day, wait and see. I'll be laughing happily with a ho, 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 hee, hee.
There are, however, several things about the Christmas tree of the 19th century and the tree of today that are completely different. First of all, they were more often than not quite small. Usually they were placed on a table and not on the floor. You don't see much of that anymore. Having visited a number of pioneer structures, I understand this now. A family of six or seven living in a handmade structure of one or two rooms just didn't have much space to spare. And that also likely explains another tradition of the tree that is long dead, that of securing the tree and putting it up only on Christmas Eve. This was a thing in the 19th century, and I contend it had nothing to do with dry trees or seasons that were not commercialized. It was simply a practical matter that the dining table could only hold that tree for so long before it just had to go. Fire was a huge concern in those days before electric lights. In fact, we'll share later this month on My Merry Christmas several newspaper editorials from the late 19th century just railing on the practice of indoor trees as simply too dangerous of a tradition because so many homes back then burned to the ground because of candles on the trees. But those candles, I tell you, were irresistible, and they represent a tradition of their own and one that now has completely vanished. That is the tradition of blowing out the candles on the tree for the last time each year. Listen to this poem from the 1870s. When holiday week's almost over and broke are some of the toys, when the Christmas tree needles are dropping and the drums will not give out noise, when someone has says it's a nuisance, this tree must be carried away, and we stand around and look gloomy and beg for it just one more day. There's one thing that keeps up our spirits. The best of the week's merry nights is just at the last when we children may blow out the Christmas tree lights. The little tots, Doris and Douglas, they blow out the ones lowest down. Their faces get redder and redder. Their foreheads are all in a frown. Then Alice, the next high by measure, put out all the candles half low, and then I, the eldest and tallest, well, I blow, and I blow, and I blow. But even I can't reach the top ones, so Father lifts up baby Grace. Her dear little mouth is a circle, all wrinkled her sweet little face. She blows out the tip-top most candles. We clap and hurrah when she's done. And that is the end of the Christmas and the very last bit of the fun. But all through the year, it's a pleasure to think of our holiday nights, the best coming last when we children may blow out the Christmas tree lights.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree.
Wait, did he just say presents on the tree? Yeah, he did. That's Bing from 1943. And if he sang it, it must have been a thing, right? Right. It was a thing. This tradition of putting Christmas presents on the tree. To get this, you've got to really know your Christmas history as it relates to gift-giving. While Christmas was celebrated with gift-giving for centuries, it really didn't take off as the gift-giving frenzy that it is today until the late 18th century. And Christmas trees just added to that tradition. As we talked about in a previous episode of the Merry Little Podcast, the poem "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" really did dictate 19th century traditions, but Santa, in all his wonder, just couldn't fit all that needed to be fit into a stocking. And that's where the tree comes in. Going back to our story earlier about the Christmas tree showing up at anti-slavery society events as a Christmas fundraiser, we find where this tradition of putting Christmas presents on the tree comes from. The Anti-Slavery Society had many causes in the 1830s, and one of them was the abuse of children. It's no secret that 19th century practices in child rearing included a fair amount of corporal punishment, and even Santa in those days carried a switch or gave coal to children who were naughty. The Anti-Slavery Society campaigned against this as part of their very famous Christmas events that featured the stunning Christmas tree with lectures about how Christmas was for children and showing love. This was done through gifts, of course, and for that, the Christmas tree was a natural in-home merchandiser of parental love. What couldn't fit in the stocking was put on the tree. Charles Follen, the activist of German heritage behind the idea of putting up a Christmas tree at these events, showed how the tree was decorated before Christmas and how it magically changed once Santa had been there. In the morning, children would find little treats on the tree packaged in cornucopia-shaped ornaments festively crafted to hold the treats. In fact, the whole tree would become a treat, and then it was transformed overnight thanks to Santa's visit. This quickly became an all-American tradition as shopkeepers began showcasing how this was done by having both Christmas trees and Santa Claus, of course, in stores in the 1840s.
I thought I'd seen all the lights and sung all the songs. I felt the holiday lasted a bit too long. I never shed any tears when Christmas was through, until I celebrated one with you. Season to last all year round.
The evolution of the Christmas tree continues, and there is much more to be said on this topic, and we will in an upcoming episode of the Merry Podcast. Stop by SantaUpdate.com this weekend as Santa gives his modern take on the Christmas tree, including the idea that your Christmas tree deserves a name. Thanks for joining us here on this episode of the Merry Little Podcast. If you have the time, we invite you to share a photo of your Christmas tree this year with the merry bunch of us here at the Merry Forums. For all the tree lovers at My Merry Christmas, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.